It's an open forum today on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Welcome to the show. We want to hear from you. There are several topics to talk about, of course. It's sort of the dog days of summer, but there's plenty going on. There's that straw poll in Iowa. Republican Michelle Bachmann was the victor, the expected leader in the race for the Republican nomination for president. Mitt Romney came in fourth. So what do you think of that? What do you think of Michelle Bachmann? Is she your candidate? Pros, cons, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. There's plenty more to talk about. What are you doing about your 401k? Are you just not looking at it, or your other investments in Wall Street? 614-292-8513. Give us a call and tell us what you think. You can also tweet us at Ann Fisher, WOSU, and you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and check it out there, put your question or comment there, because there's plenty to talk about. There's those London riots. They're calling in a retired law enforcement official from the United States to consult on how to manage the crowds and manage the violence in London right now. Do you think we have something to teach the UK about managing violence? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Now, the state's top court, the Ohio Supreme Court, has rejected a challenge to that referendum issue on the mandated health care. It's a lawsuit. Well, there was a lawsuit attempting to block a proposed challenge to President Obama's health care law from Ohio's ballot. It was blocked itself Friday by the Ohio Supreme Court. The court unanimously found that the liberal advocacy group Progress Ohio had failed in the challenge of petitions filed by backers of the proposed constitutional amendment to qualify for the November ballot. So we're going to have the ballot challenge to President Obama's health care law on the Ohio ballot in November, as well as issue two, which is the repeal of Senate Bill 5, the much debated and very controversial new law that restricts organized labor activity in the state of Ohio's public sector, teachers, firefighters, law enforcement, state employees, that sort of thing. 614-292-8513. The issue has been in recent days whether or not backers of issue two, the opponents of Senate Bill 5, should consider a compromise with the Senate Bill 5 promoters. What do you think? Should they compromise and avoid a ballot issue in November? Give us a call and let us know what you think right now. And Abe in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Well, I think SB 5, there should be a compromise, but it's another compromise. I think that what really needs to be done here is the Dispatch had a good editorial. They should eliminate SB 5 completely, and then pass the two things that people like, the insurance thing and the retirement thing. And that. But there is one problem. In addition, I would like to see the health care bill disappear, because the question is, who will go to the polls? Once you remove SB 5, you are going to end with having the people who would get rid of the healthcare mandate, they will go to the polls, and the other ones would probably not. So to me, it has to be all three things happen, or otherwise the referendum should stay on.
So you want the compromise, you want the issue two to go away, then, and then also referendum issue on mandated health care, which of course has no real standing, but in any event, that you'd think that should go away as well.
Yeah, I think that if both things should go away. Think about all the money we would save. Now, of course, the commercial TV stations would not be happy about that, but we'd save a lot of money, we'd save a lot of fights, we'd save a lot of insults, we'd save a lot of controversy and bad blood and so on. It would be very nice.
But Senate Bill, or the issue too, is not related. The groups are unrelated to the one challenging the mandated health care reform.
Yeah, they may be unrelated, but the same people will go to vote. In other words, the people who would have gone to opposition, trying to support SB 5 would be the same people that would support the mandate. Oppose the mandate.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a question of who will go to the polls. And, you know, what happened in 2010, well, there's an awful lot of people did not go to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And we got what we have. So I don't only think in terms of bills. I also think in terms of who goes to vote.
Are you concerned that if Senate or the issue 2, the repeal of Senate Bill 5, stays on the ballot along with the referendum on the mandated health care, that it would be more in danger of failing? Is that a concern?
No, I think that if it depends on the campaign, but I think mm-hmm. that the people who are in favor of eliminating the mandate will also be the ones in favor of supporting SB 5. And that's why I'm linking them. I'm
okay.
not linking them because they have the same topic. I'm not linking them because they have the same support, proponents. But I'm linking it because I think they have the same supporters.
Okay. Abe in Worthington, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Take care. Bye. 614-292-8513. We have an open forum today. Kind of a take a breath and mull some of these issues now that the legislature's gone home and now that Congress has apparently done something. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Sue in Worthington, you want to talk about the repeal of Senate Bill 5 as well. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I believe that it should be repealed, and I believe that they should not compromise this time. I also believe that the health care bill should be left alone. It's what the voters decided on. It's what our president put out there for us to vote on. And then they want to go against what he's trying to do for our country. And we need health care. We need a mandate that says everyone needs to put funds into insurance for each and every one of us.
You know,
and it'll make it cheaper in the long run. And people, they've demagogued this issue to make it sound like a bad thing, both issues. And the bargaining right for people, that's what made the country to be the best workplaces in the world. And if we go back, we're going back in history.
You want Senate Bill 5 on the ballot. You don't want to compromise. Issue 2 on the ballot, which would repeal Senate Bill 5 if it's approved by voters.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
Senate Bill 5 was approved by the legislature. It was signed by the governor. Why is that issue ballot worthy and the other one not?
I believe that it's ballot worthy because when it was a Republican legislature. Ohio is our political problems, I believe, are because of the Republicans. They have a mandate in this state, in the entire state. And I believe that they pushed it through and it wasn't done fairly. And they didn't represent it right. They demagogued that issue also. And people voted on it. And now the people are saying, oh, no, this is not what I wanted. Don't take away my bargaining rights.
But polling has shown that they would like some pullback on the insurance benefits and pension benefits. And that,
you know, and that could be, you know, that in time that could be adjusted. I don't think it should be pulled back completely. I mean, it's what has worked for, you know, for years for workers' rights. I just can't believe that people want to take away workers' rights, you know, and it takes away from everyone's rights, you know, women's rights, everyone's. And I just can't believe that they want to do that. I don't believe that that polling is right. I really don't.
Okay. Sue in Worthington, thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 614-292-8513. We're going to talk about issue two, and which is the repeal, would be the repeal of Senate Bill 5 if it's approved in November, and also the health ballot and healthcare ballot initiative that now will be on the ballot in November. And Abdul and Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, please. My question is, we have been saying that the federal government cannot force us to have health insurance, which is taking away from our own rights. The states and the federal government forcing all citizens to have auto insurance, which both of them are benefiting for in this insurance industry, and also both of them, if I don't have an insurance or if I don't have auto insurance or health insurance, when I get an accident or when I go to the hospital, both of them involve it for taxpayers' money. So why some people or lawmakers are saying one part is taking away and the other part is giving away, which I don't understand.
Well, some people don't say that the health and the auto insurance issues aren't comparable, because with auto insurance, you don't need it unless you actually own an automobile or, you know, any kind of motor vehicle.
But most of the U.S. citizens have auto cars.
That's true.
And both of them, they involve the taxpayers' money. When I get an accident, I don't have auto insurance. And then when I have health insurance, when I don't have health insurance and I get sick and go to the emergency, they both involve it. Taxpayers' money. So why are they saying that? They think we are foolish and don't understand the system?
So you support the health care reform
act? Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely.
And now, do you have health insurance now?
No, I don't.
Okay. How do you pay for medical bills?
I have to go to local neighborhood services and pay whatever according to my income.
The clinics then that are available.
Yeah.
And those are getting cut back now because of budget cuts at the federal level.
I know that. But the people we are elected to represent us are working for the interest of the people who are trying to rob us and take our money back and our rights. So that's, I don't understand. Let us take the country back. Who they want to take back from the country? I don't understand. Somebody should explain to me that too.
Well, Abdul, we'll see if someone can, and I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Take care. 614-292-8513. We have an open forum today. We want to wrap up the conversation on Senate Bill 5 and or slash Issue 2 and also the health care reform challenge that will be on the ballot in November now since the state's top court rejected a challenge to that issue. So and then we want to move on as well to the sidewalk issues on Gay Street in Columbus. Do you shop there? Do you eat there? Do you own a business there? And are you having problems with the city and its ordinances that have been irritating, to say the very least, businesses along Gay Street? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. There's more to talk about. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation is later today from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 69 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:20 this morning. There is a chance of showers today, otherwise cloudy skies, maybe some sunshine peeking through those clouds, a high of 77 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight and a low of 63. Sunshine for Tuesday, a high of 83 degrees. Clear skies Tuesday night and a low of 62. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
It- It's an open forum this hour. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can tweet us at AnnFisherWOSU if you want to communicate with us that way. Let's change gears, switch gears here real quick. We can always go back to Senate Bill 5/Issue 2 and healthcare reform referendum if you want. But I did want to move on to that gay street issue. And welcome to the show, Elizabeth Lesner.
Thank you so much, Anne.
Tell us, what is the latest? What's going to happen today? Business owners, gay street business owners are getting together for a discussion?
We are. Things have just sort of reached a boiling point in downtown Columbus, particularly on Gay Street. There's been a lot of reporting and information coming out over the last couple of weeks about stepped up and increased enforcement by the city of Columbus. In the Dispatch a few weeks ago, Mayor Michael Coleman asked that the Department of Public Service come up with some common sense policies to sort of handle some of the issues that we're having downtown. As you know, mm-hmm. they shut down several of the vendors at the Pearl Alley Market,
right.
the farmers market. In addition,
because they were out onto Broad Street, right?
They were on the sidewalk, mm-hmm. yeah.
Which they've been doing for the last couple of years.
Yeah, several years. Mm-hmm. In addition, after sort of the mayor asked for some common sense, it seems like it's gotten worse. A lot of my neighbors are getting in trouble for, you know, plant leaves encroaching on the public right-of-way, patio umbrellas that are 8 to 10 feet tall, invading the quote-unquote city's airspace. things that sound anything contrary or anything but common sense. So
now,
we're working to try to fight that.
No one's against, ostensibly against, commerce in downtown. Everybody wants a vital, vibrant downtown.
Absolutely.
What is behind this? What's the deal? The mayor has said, you know, make things work, you know, make common sense changes to public policy on this score, but it's gotten worse, you say.
It's gotten worse. It comes from one department, the Department of Public Service, that's headed by Director Mark Kelsey. Unfortunately, it's, you know, small business has a long, long reputation of working really closely with our city and regulatory agencies. Restaurants, small business have wonderful relationships mm-hmm. with, you know, the Department of Public Health, Department of Public Building Services, and many, many others. And for whatever reason, when we take our concerns to this in particular department, they're unable to give us a straight answer. They're unable to even return phone calls to us. So as you can imagine, there's so much anger. There's so much just frustration on the part of the businesses. One business owner invested $15,000 to improve his patio space. He got all the necessary permits, went through all the red tape, and, you know, a city enforcer was there just this past Thursday asking him to dismantle his fence, take down the flowers, and get rid of the umbrella. So it's gotten really not common sense.
Now, Liz Lesner, I should say, owns a couple of restaurants downtown, the Tip Top,
yep.
for one, and also Dirty Frank's.
Yep.
And also so a Short North business, and then one down in the Brew, well, not in the Brew District.
We're down at Jury Room, South downtown.
Jury Room. If you have a question or comment on this topic, we welcome it, 614-292-8513. So what's the meeting about
today? We've been trying unsuccessfully for several months to schedule meetings with Department of Public Service, and finally with some pressure, we're very grateful that the mayor intervened and did request that the Department of Public Service have a meeting with us today. And we invite the public to support your favorite local small business. It's at 109 North Front Street at 4 p.m. this afternoon. We're going to demand three things. We would like the mayor right now to put an end to lift the enforcement until we can come up with some common sense resolutions, because, you know, it hasn't been working. So we'd like to ask him to lift all non-emergency enforcement. If a flower leaf is encroaching into the public right away, we want to be sure we can talk to our city council. The second thing we'd like to do is have our city council write a new code for us. The current code that the department is working out of is from 1950.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2011, and downtown sure looks a lot different than it did back then. So we're going to ask that they update the code. And then the third thing we'd like to ask is that this sidewalk enforcement go under the the Department of Economic Development. Our sidewalks are bringing commerce, they're bringing business, you know, those vendors to downtown. So we want to see all three of those things happen. And, you know, we just, all of us are, we've invested in downtown, we've invested in the mayor's vision. We want downtown to get better. The Department of Public Service is concerned about ADA compliance, and I can assure you that every single business is too.
Have you seen any complaints?
Not a one complaint. Many of us, we don't. We're not
ADA, meaning the
American Disabilities Act.
Right.
You know, we're very, very aware of that. And the last thing we would ever want to do is prevent someone from being able to get into our restaurants or to be able to access High Street or Gay Street. So that, of course, is important. There's just what we're fighting with is city code. We're not fighting with ADA regulation. We're fighting with the city code, which is grossly outdated.
All right. 1950. Wow.
Yeah, right.
A few years back. Gosh, finally, something before I was born. Liz Lessner, thanks for your call. And anybody else who wants to talk about this, give us a call. The meeting is at 4 o'clock today, right, Liz?
4 p.m., 109 North Front Street. North and we'd love all the support we can get. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet. Take care, Liz.
Thanks.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. It's an open forum today. We were just talking about the conflict on Gay Street with the city over ordinances that prevent or that restrict what can be put on the sidewalks in front of the restaurants. It's a really growing popular movement to have the patio eating and dining, al fresco dining, I guess is one way to put it, and the flower boxes and that sort of thing that beautify the al fresco dining in downtown Columbus. Tell us what you think. Do you like it? Is it something you like to see the city change in terms of its code? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. But back for now to issue two. Welcome to the show, Debbie in Athens.
Hi, Ann. It's Debbie Phillips. I'm the state rep from the Athens area.
Hi, Debbie.
And it's good to talk with you again.
You too.
I just wanted to say that as far as I can tell, this whole question of a compromise has been kind of a manufactured story. When Senate Bill 5 came through, I was there when they locked people out of the state house, and the folks who pushed Senate Bill 5 were not willing to sit down, negotiate, consider any kind of compromise on the issue. And I know from talking with folks from a lot of different, whether it's local school boards or other local jurisdictions, that public employees have compromised and made concessions and negotiated to try to help deal with budget problems, and that most public employees do contribute something toward their health care. So I think that going forward with Issue 2 to repeal Senate Bill 5 is a way for the people to have a voice finally on this issue.
Do you think that there would have been as much compromise at the local level with negotiations and contracts and that sort of thing if not for Senate Bill 5?
Well, I know.
In other words, it's put the pressure on local organized, you know, labor to do that?
I don't think that that's been the issue, because like this is really over time I've seen that willingness to negotiate. I've seen teachers sit down at the bargaining table and help brainstorm ways for a school district to save money when times are tight financially. And I know that with Ted Strickland's last budget, the state employees gave, I believe, over $250 million in concessions through furlough days and pay freezes. And that was those were concessions gained at the bargaining table, not by taking away bargaining rights.
Okay. Debbie Phillips, state representative from Athens, thanks for giving us a call.
Sure. Take care.
Take care. 614-292-8513. If you'd like to give us a call, we welcome it. And Tina in Sunbury, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I know of a public sector union that works anywhere from 12 to 14 hours a day, work 6 days a week. They get no overtime. They get no great compensation packages. They get told where to live and how long they're going to stay there. They can't talk out against their boss or say anything against them at all for fear of being fired. They are in constant danger. They take bullets for us. And they are a
they can't collectively bargain. It's called the U.S. soldier. They make $12,494 a year is their base pay. They have to pay for their uniforms now. They've had to have a lot of things taken away from them during the budget cut.
Mm-hmm.
So I am in strong support of the SB 5 because I don't think the public sector unions have the right to gripe or complain about anything if the American soldier has no right.
State Representative Debbie Phillips was just on the air, and she said that public sector unions have been negotiating and making concessions even before Senate Bill 5, that they'll do that anyways.
Yeah, well, that's fine, except for one thing. The problem is the public sector unions, they talk about good game, and they go to the table, and they talk about their negotiations. The American soldier has no negotiation. They're not allowed to negotiate. They take whatever's coming. They have great education. They have honor. They have duty to country. I hear teachers always saying, oh, I do it for the love of the job. It's not the money. Then shut up about it, because as far as I'm concerned, I've had to attend two funerals for my daughter's friend. She was in Afghanistan for a year. She has no right. She can't speak out against anything. She can't be political. She can't say anything. She can't do anything. She's told where to go and when to do it.
And you like
Why
it that way.
Union? I think it's the way it has to be.
And you
she
think
signed
it's,
up for it.
You think, right. She signed up for it. So
that's right.
Teachers
so,
signed up.
So did the union. Mm-hmm. The union signed up. They said they love teaching. They love doing their job. Well, they make a heck of a lot more than the American soldier, and their compensation package is unreal. So why are they better? Why do people think that it's okay for them to have their collective bargaining rights and compensation packages, but nobody ever thinks about the American soldier?
Well,
so it's okay.
Okay. I get what you're saying. I mean, there's no question about it. A couple things. Education level. They've
oh,
a lot of teachers. Well, no. Let me finish. A lot of people invest a lot of money in higher ed to become teachers. They take a year off from life and don't get paid as a student teacher. And most of them, if not all of them now, are required to be upgrading their education constantly, every summer almost. And a master's degree is a given these days for a teacher, and particularly in a suburban school district.
Okay, fine.
It's expensive.
My daughter has her education. She had to have an education to do what she does.
What does she do?
She's in military intelligence. She's a Cygnet.
Okay.
She had 18 months of schooling after she got in, even after her college education.
Mm-hmm.
Her skills have to be constantly upgraded. She was taken to Fort Huachuca, Arizona for 6 weeks from her family.
But did she pay for
that.
It?
No, she didn't pay for it. But you know what? That's a small sacrifice compared to the fact she's taking bullets for us.
Mm-hmm.
She's in a war zone for us on our freedom. You cannot equate what the American soldier does, regardless of education status, compared to what they're getting as a teacher or a firefighter or a policeman. Because it does. They're not putting, sure, policemen do. And
I was going to say.
Put their life on the line, not 24/7. Yeah. They aren't told that they're going to be in a war zone for a year. They aren't told they can't speak out against their president if they don't like what they're doing. They're not told they cannot say anything about their upper, if there's a problem with a...
Or, but should they be, shouldn't they be able to speak out? I mean, are you saying that you want them to not have those rights, or...
I am saying that if they don't have these rights,
mm-hmm.
why do the teachers and the public sector unions think they're better than the American soldier?
Okay.
That's my point.
All right. Tina, thank you for calling, and best wishes for your daughter.
Thank you.
Take care. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we want to... know what you think about a couple of different issues. We were talking about Gay Street and the merchants on Gay Street and their battle with one department in the city government and how they manage their al fresco dining situations. 614-292-8513 if you want to talk about that. We were talking with Liz Lesner a little earlier. Tina from Sunbury was just talking about Senate Bill 5. She thinks that nothing should be changed in it, and I imagine Tina will vote for issue 2 in fall. I think that's what it is. Now I'm having second thoughts, and I'm getting, we're going to check on that. 614-292-8513. But let's talk to somebody who supports Issue 2 or thinks that Issue 2 is important. Bob in Westerville.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
If Issue 2 is on the ballot, you support Senate Bill 5, you support the restrictions on collective bargaining in Ohio's for its public employees, would you vote for or against Issue 2?
Well, my belief is that public employee unions are not in the best interest of the public.
Okay.
Public employees have a lot of protections already by law.
So
they
don't
need a union.
So you think that Senate Bill 5 is a good thing?
It's an obviously good thing. I pay property taxes for local school districts that keep going up and up and up and up. School districts do not economize. They tell you they do, but the fact is they don't. All you have to do is look at their expenses.
Like what? Give me an example.
Well, let's see. My local school district put a tennis court in a middle school. It's a 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. 6th, 7th, and 8th graders don't need tennis courts. Now they have to spend about $40,000 refurbishing those tennis courts that they didn't need in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
They've just given their new treasurer a $24,000 a year increase. $24,000 increase up to $133,000 a year.
Westerville's a big district.
Yeah, but the old one was making $109,000. You mean you can't find a glorified bookkeeper, which is what the treasurer is, for $109,000? You have to raise it $24,000?
How long have you lived in Westerville?
5 years.
Why'd you move there?
It wasn't for the schools.
Mm-hmm.
It was not for the schools, and Westerville is fine. Don't make it a Westerville discussion.
Well, no. I mean, but you moved into the – no, I'm wondering why you moved there. I mean, sometimes people have lived there for a long time, and the things have changed over time, and they don't like how they've changed. And other people, you know, they move to a district, and it's – Westerville's been growing and heading in these directions for a long time. So that's why I'm asking. I'm not making it about the city of Westerville. I'm talking about the schools.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the schools are fine if they could learn, and I haven't – been in a school district yet, and I've lived in different parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been in a school district yet that really knows how to economize. None of them do, because they always, whenever you have any discussion of, well, you need to pay more for the children, the children aren't getting the money. The teachers, 85% of the school budget is payroll.
That's true of any almost any business.
And your ideas, somebody's told you some stuff about the education levels for teachers and what's mandated and so on. It is very easy to get a master's degree in education.
Okay.
You get it on the computer,
okay.
And you're getting it from other educators, so they lean in your direction.
All right.
So it's really easy to do. It doesn't take anything more than what they're doing all the time with their computers.
Okay. I just want to clarify, Bob, hang on, that on Issue 2, a yes vote means you approve of Senate Bill 5. A no vote means you reject the law. That will be tentatively, or so far it's on the ballot in November. A yes vote means you approve of Senate Bill 5, and a no vote means you reject the law. Bob, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I want to take one more call before we take a break, and I'm trying to, let's see, Paige from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You're recently discharged from the Army, right?
Yes, recently discharged.
Thank you for your service.
The same MOS as Tina's daughter, who's just on the air. And I'm calling just because, you know, I listen to these shows, and a lot of people who are very pro-military or have served in the military, they come across as, you know, very right-wing, very anti-rights for civilians. And I just thought that was an absurd argument for why teachers and firemen and policemen should not have collective bargaining rights.
Well,
I mean, as a soldier, I mean, we're told we're serving to preserve the rights of other Americans. And I believe that. And I believe one of those rights is the right to bargain collectively.
Okay. So you don't like being compared to
those kinds
of public workers?
No, it's not that. It's just I don't want the soldier to be used, oh, the soldier doesn't get this, the soldier doesn't get that, as for an excuse for why other people shouldn't have rights. You know, people, the soldier, there's a reason why a soldier, well, first of all, I did take issue with one thing she said. She said that soldiers cannot speak out against their government. That's not true. When you're not in uniform, when you're off duty, you have all the rights to protest, to speak your mind, to say what you want. So that was false.
Again, okay.
There's a reason why, you know, soldiers can't bargain collectively. You know, out in the field, you can't. It's not a democracy. It's a dictatorship. So.
And it's something you sign up for.
Something you sign up for. I mean, I think a teacher doesn't sign up thinking they're not going to have any rights. But a teacher, there's no reason why a teacher shouldn't be able to bargain for their rights.
Okay. Now, you said you've been discharged. When was that?
Just in January of 2011.
Well, once again, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And thanks for that call. We're going to continue the conversation when we return after this. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear the questions you wish you could have asked to people like Tom Kenny, the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants.
Did it help to hear what your voice sounded like on helium? Did you learn something about your voice you didn't know before?
Yeah, I learned that I don't really need the helium.
Because it's pretty easy to flick that switch and go right up there.
The most interesting people in show business on Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon. On the next Fresh Air, someone else's twin. Psychologist Nancy Siegel tells Fresh Air about a twin who was switched at birth, but later ran into her identical sibling at a shopping mall. That discussion and more on Fresh Air beginning at noon, right here on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the state auto insurance companies providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
And hour two of All Sides with Ann Fisher begins in just about 20 minutes. And Ann will discuss things we've learned that have stayed with us throughout time with Hair Theater Beauty School founder Patwin Brown. Join us for that discussion beginning at 11 here on 89.7 NPR News. There is a chance of showers today, cloudy skies, maybe a little sunshine and a high near 77. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 63 degrees, sunshine for Tuesday, a high of 83. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues.
It's an open forum this hour. Welcome back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you have a question or comment for us, 614-292-8513. The Ohio Supreme Court has rejected a challenge to the referendum on the mandated health care in Ohio. Whether or not it has any standing is debatable, but the issue will be the referendum will be on the ballot in November as it stands right now. And John in Pataskala, you want to talk about that? Welcome to the show.
Yes. The thing that I was curious about is how interstate commerce is reflected in the healthcare bill, because as I understand it, a company like Aetna cannot sell outside of Ohio and versus, you know, a company in Vermont selling to me in Ohio, whereas auto insurance is nationwide. You know, I can buy Allstate anywhere. And
right.
So I was just kind of curious. I've never really gotten a good answer on how it is that we've never opened up, competition like that to health insurers.
Well, ultimately, it all boils down to what the industry is interested in and what lawmakers at the federal level, because it's interstate, want to do and what they think is useful. I would imagine why exactly, because they don't want the competition?
That's your guess is as good as mine. I've had a couple discussions with some senior partners of mine, because we have recently had to renegotiate our health insurance contract for our employees. But, I just haven't been able to find a good answer, and I was just curious if you or anybody that was listening would know.
Okay. Well, anybody who's listening out there who knows the answer to that question or understands that issue, give us a call, 614-292-8513. But, John, before I let you go, what is your impression of the health care reform law as it stands?
I I would like to take care of our employees, and I know that our insurance rates have gone up by 25% to $325,000 a year now. That's just what we pay. Our employees pay a portion of that. But, you know, it's a 25% increase in 1 year kind of hit hard, and I don't know if the mandate will help control costs over the long term. I don't think that it will in the short term, obviously, mm-hmm. because we did get a decent raise in rates. But I can't give a very good answer on whether or not I think it should happen as something the government should tell us to do, or if it's something that should be more regulated by the overall industry.
Okay. All right, John, thanks for your call.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for waiting. Anybody knows and understands the interstate commerce issue regarding health insurance in the United States, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And I am told that I have an email that relates to that. The problem with health care from Stephen. He says the problem with the health care issue on the ballot is that win or lose it has no effect. Federal law takes precedence over state law. Unless these people are suggesting secession like Rick Perry and Sarah Palin do for Texas and Alaska, the law, if finally found constitutional, will be implemented in Ohio. If it is not found constitutional, the balloting is moot. This is a non-issue put on the ballot to attract people to vote to support issue 2, the Senate Bill 5 law. We don't know about that, but They'll never tell. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. And let's go back to the patio issue, the sidewalk cafe issue. Scott in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
You want to talk about businesses along Gay Street with the city?
Yeah, I was on Twitter, and I got a message from Liz. Thank you. And supporting an independent business. I just left a chef in that in Arlington. You know, the city really needs to come to the table and offer up expeditiously something that gets it so that these people can operate their business. They have no idea how difficult it is for an independent business person, small business, to operate and then have regulations that take months to pass on mm-hmm. something that there's already patios on Gay Street. What do you need to do to, if somebody wants to add a patio, you know, why can't it be done in a manner that's beneficial for the business, which in turn benefits the city?
Okay.
With a greater revenue stream. I mean, it's basic elementary math problem.
All right.
To me.
And it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see what RJ in Clintonville has to say. Scott, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Take care. RJ in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to point out that I think it is very important that we work together to have a collaborative approach with business owners and with the city and with other interested individuals to update outdated city codes. You know, I really believe that the patios and, for that matter, the farmers markets in the Gay Street and Pearl Alley area really bring vibrancy to that neighborhood that just a few years ago was really run down. And it sounds like these codes are very outdated. They don't reflect the city that we currently have or that we want. And I'm just hopeful that the city will include the business owners when making decisions about these enforcements. If memory serves, when the farmers market, the Pearl Alley Farmers Market, was recently told that their sidewalk vendors who did not have licenses could no longer set up shop. There was quite an uproar from the community who really appreciated what that farmers market was adding to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And if I believe the city temporarily stopped enforcing that part of the code, which shows that they also believe that there may be an issue with the way that the current code is working and the way that it's written, and that we do need to sit down and reevaluate it. And I'm hopeful that we can work together to do that.
My understanding is that the Pearl Alley Farmers Market was bleeding out onto Broad Street,
mm-hmm.
and that those vendors from the farmers market didn't have the appropriate paperwork for the to be street vendors.
Yeah, that sounds correct.
Their category changed. So, okay, sure. RJ, thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care. 614-292-8513. The GOP presidential candidates met last Thursday in Iowa for the third debate in the series so far. Added pressure added to the sparring during this debate, and the dialogue between Tim Pawlenty, who has now subtracted himself from the equation, and Michelle Bachmann grew particularly heated. Let's listen.
She says that she's fighting for these things. She fought for less government spending, we got a lot more. She led the effort against Obamacare, we got Obamacare. She led the effort against TARP, we got TARP. She said she's got a titanium spine. It's not her spine we're worried about, it's her record of results. If that's your view of effective leadership with results, please stop, because you're killing us.
All right. Wait. Congressman Bachmann, 30 seconds to respond.
Thank you so much. I was at the tip of the spear fighting against the implementation of Obamacare in the United States Congress. Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and Barack Obama ran Congress, but I gave them a run for their money.
Okay. During that debate, some claimed that Mitt Romney left as the strongest contender. He came in fourth in the straw poll, however, and Tim Pawlenty's out of the picture now. So what were your views on the debate? What do you think? And Jamie in North Linden, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann. I just wanted to comment that Michelle Bachmann winning the straw poll, I don't really understand how the straw poll works, honestly. It seems a little weird to me with the 4,000 votes for her and 4,000 votes for Ron Paul.
Well, there's $30 tickets, and you have to get the ticket from a candidate, I think.
Okay.
Something like that. It's different. Oh, you want? Hey, you know what, Jamie? Why don't you turn down your radio?
That I have.
Okay.
I was just interested to point out that he won. He got second place, but he was only down by 1%, and that really surprised me. I expected Michelle Bachmann to win, obviously, since she's from there and had the right religious view, if you will. But I was really surprised by Ron Paul's showing. So.
Well, why were you surprised by Ron Paul? What about him surprised you in terms of his... Oh, that's it, I guess. 614-292-8513. Were you surprised by the straw vote, the straw poll in Iowa? 614-292-8513 is the number to call. Mike, in Columbus, you want to compare and contrast Senate Bill 5 and the health care ballot issue. What's to compare and contrast?
Oh, I just think, we voted for John Kasich. There's, a strong sentiment in the electorate that a lot of public employees, the pendulum is kind of going a little too far in their direction. Their legacy costs and their benefits and pay have gotten a little out of hand. They need to kind of scale back down to earth, like the rest of us working in the private sector have over the last, 4 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have to take, it amazes me that they couldn't get together and, pay, 4% or so of their salary towards their benefits and their health insurance and retirement costs. But instead they're going to kind of put all their chips in this poker game and face layoffs. I mean, there's only so much money to go around.
Are you saying that they do contribute to their...
Well, I think they maybe need to contribute a little bit
more. Okay. I was going to say most of them do contribute, and they don't get Social Security either.
Correct.
So,
which can be a good thing too. I mean, they can.
That's debatable.
That money is invested wisely, and I think we've seen some issues with that in the past. But,
right.
But anyways, I just think we voted for Kasich. We knew they kind of knew that this was the writing was on the wall that a lot of these public employees are the rhetoric is if you say you're against the school levy, you're anti-child, and if you're, voting, to scale back some of these benefits, you're against the middle class, if you are against illegal immigration, you're a bigot. I mean, I just think we need to tone down some of this rhetoric here, first of all. But, I mean, the writing was on the wall. We knew that this was coming. Kasich was voted in, and this is, I think legitimately, you know, was passed, the SB 5. Of course, now there's a referendum on it, but I just want to contrast that with the way the national health care plan was passed in the, you know, backdoor deals, senators getting sweetheart deals, corporations and unions getting exemptions from the legislation that was passed. I mean, how you can look at something like that, the national health care or Obamacare or whatever you want to call it, and think that somehow that was good legislation or the way our country should work. I just think it's, I mean, that's a nightmare. I mean, how that was rammed down our throats. And then, you know, have Nancy Pelosi saying we're going to have to vote for it before we find out what's in it. You know, and now you're getting these questions about interstate commerce and what happens if this happens, and you know, we're not going to find out until 2014. I mean, it's just, it was just really reckless. And, you know, to compare that to SB 5, I think, you know, you have a good, you know, compare and contrast about how, you know, different parties work. And, you know, I really think there was no transparency whatsoever coming from a man who said that he was going to bring transparency back to the government. I just, it's scary.
Thanks for your call, Mike. People have the same views coming from different sides of the issue about both of those. That's what's interesting to me, is people who oppose the health care reform think that it was done in behind closed doors, and likewise the Senate Bill 5, they think that was rammed through too. So they'll both be on the ballot in November. The difference is that the health care reform referendum won't really have much standing. If you support Senate Bill 5, okay. So, issue 2 will. So, Mike, thanks for your call. We were running out of time. Thank you. And thank you for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. Thanks for joining our open forum today. Appreciate it. And we'll have more. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.